KCAST Radio, your home for Curry and Clip on the morning's classic rock to the bone. It's Tony Curry here. Dr. Josh is off the rest of this week, and we'll be back on Monday getting after doing some Facebook Live as well as some other great things here on KCAST Radio. It has been a tumultuous last, say, 3 weeks with the passing of one Dusty Hill, of course, of ZZ Top. They played Tuscaloosa Amphitheater the following night and pulled it off without a hinge and did a fantastic job in front of a sold-out crowd. Then we found out yesterday that, of course, Charlie Watts passed away at the age of 80. And I got on the phone two good friends of mine who I've known for well over 30. It's been 30 years, right, guys?
Right on, yeah. Brother. Yep.
And they simply go by Ed and Fred. If you've been to any concert in the Birmingham area, or really anywhere in the Southeast and probably anywhere in the country, you've seen these towering, strapping, good-looking twins, almost as good-looking, as good-looking as me. And they've done it all. And again, for people who are listening outside, because we're a worldwide entity here, tell people exactly what you do, and then I want to get into some Rolling Stones stories, because I know you're very good friends with Ron Wood. You've done some things with some of the most iconic rock and rollers, but what exactly do you guys do for outside? And by the way, when I mentioned the fact that I've been all over social media mentioning you guys are going to be on, people are going crazy to hear Ed and Fred on KCAST Radio's Curry and Clip with this morning. But tell everybody about what exactly you guys get into, and then I want to get into some of these great stories you have.
Hey, this is Fred. Hey, and it's Ed. Hello, everybody. Yes, we're local artists here in Birmingham. We do one-of-a-kind sculpture and art and leather, and the Stones called us up in 89, so we hightailed it to Allegiant Field. And
heard we were doing work for The Who. And
then, yeah, John Entwistle, and the word got around with the guitar techs. And then next thing we know, we were ridden on the stage in a golf cart and got to see the sound check, and everybody just took on to us like they'd known us for years. And then we walking back to the dressing room, and we was with Ronnie, and he was always hyped up big time. And next thing we know, we're sitting down with Charlie and Keith and Ronnie, and Mick was in the hallway talking to Lisa Fisher, and he kind of nodded at us. And, you know, Charlie was always just a cordial, you know, finding laid back in, you know, gentleman.
You never know, he was a rocker with his tailor suits and everything. But ask us a question if you got something. And we got 30 years of stories with these guys and a lot of other ones. It's hard to keep everything in order, you know?
Now, I understand Ed and Fred, and they're affectionately known just as Ed and Fred. And again, if you've been to a concert, you've seen the Towering Twins, and they just do accessories and just one-of-a-kind unique guitar straps for so many different rock and rollers. Before we actually get into some Rolling Stone stories, I do want to ask you, who else have you written, and who else have you actually created this unique guitar straps and other accessories for rock and rollers? Who else have you worked with?
Well, we spent a lot of time with John Entwistle. We made his three bass straps with The Who, and then we the band. We hung out with Leon and Rick Danko. We made Rick a guitar strap, and Leon wanted a Saturn and Moon straps. And you know, if you don't do something right away, these guys are getting old, you know. So we missed out on a few things. And then Herbie Mann, we did his heart
flute case years ago,
in the 70s. B.B. King, we made him a little bag, and he really wanted some other things.
John Lee Hooker, you just named
it. Stevie Ray Vaughan wanted a guitar strap. We talked to him several times and designing it when he last came in Birmingham in 89. We never got that picture with him, you know. You know how it is. If you don't do it then, you're not going to get the picture.
Plus, we did quite a bit of work, and we're still doing a lot of work for old Billy Gibbons, ZZ Top. And
he had a lot of different specialty bags that you don't see. And then James Harmon, he was an old blues. He was one of Billy's best friends. We made a lot of harmonica bags for him. And
Ice Pick James is what they called him.
There you go.
And Skinner, you know, we made a little bag for Leon, and then he wanted a cool bass strap. He had lights on his helmet and all this stuff, you know. So it's
and Ricky Matlock, you know, I'm so glad he's doing well and back on tour. We're looking forward to seeing those guys. It's like you said, it's crazy times. You never know. It's day to day a lot of times.
Yeah,
the Stones are going to keep on touring in memory of they're doing a tribute for Charlie Watts, and we talked to Chuck with yesterday, and he told us they're going to. The wheel's going to keep turning. That's what Charlie would have wanted.
And then they're using Keith's drummer that's in his band, and they think that's the best pick. You know, nobody's Charlie. It's going to be different.
Yeah, and I know a lot of people, and Ed and Fred join us here, and that's all I have to identify them by, and everyone knows who they are. They are strap and accessory guys to the rock and roll guys, and you guys have been probably back in green rooms more so than the bands themselves, and so I can't wait to hear some of these stories that you have about the Rolling Stones, and I know you're good friends with Ronnie Wood, but it's just such a strange time, and certainly to lose Dusty, and you were mentioning off the phone before we started this interview, just what a firm handshake and how big his hands were. I reached out to you a couple of weeks ago. I didn't know if you had done some work, and I knew you did some stuff with Billy, but talk about your brush with Dusty before we talk about Charlie.
Well, Dusty, we'd see him. We mainly, you know, they like to hang out after the show and everything, and Billy was our main gig. You know, he'd always have us on the bus for a few hours, but we'd hang out with Charlie and Frank Beard. Dusty. And, you know, they were talking about doing things, and Dusty's got a...
he also has a big horse riders. People may not know that, but he was an excellent horseman, and he really enjoyed being at the farm. He enjoyed his time off because he was spending so much time at the farm and everything. Well, one funny story, we were backstage, and there was these, of course, cute girls were sitting with him. And Dusty and Frank kept on coming up saying hi to us. And we were saying, well, they sure are being friendly to us. And came to find out that these girls were locals at a club
in Atlanta.
And they're doing well. And that was so funny, you know. That,
and Charlie was, Dusty was having too much to drink in a bar in Dallas. And he carried a boot pistol and he pulled it out and shot himself in the foot. So they rushed him to the hospital. And then two ladies escorted him, and they said, well, who's with Charlie? And one girl said, I am. The other one said, no, I'm his fiance. Both women were there, and he didn't know what to do. So he ended up marrying the one that
the best looking one, I guess. You know, like all of them, they all seem to be really genuinely friendly with us. You know, it makes us feel good when we show up, because I guess we're on a different level because we have something that we're offering these guys.
And we don't kiss them and treat them like they're famous rock stars, you know?
We've always just tried to be ourselves. And like you say, Ed and Fred, that's how we sign our straps. And one day we were doing a strap, and we put Ed and Fred and the E, you could see it on both of them. And Charlie came up to us and he said, well, hey, Ed and Ed. And I was saying, wow, that's kind of crazy, you know. And then we looked at the strap, and you could see it looked like Ed and Ed. But he was on top of everything. He knew everything going on. He knew about us, what we were doing. He would, he was talking to Lenny Kravitz, and he introduced us to him. And Fred said, yeah. He said, I heard y'all have done the straps for the Stones. And Fred said, yeah, we've done a couple. And Charlie said, a couple? And then Fred said, okay, over 30. And Charlie shook his head, yes, you know, and I don't know, it was just
one time.
You know, you never know when you're gonna last see somebody, you know.
Yeah.
Just like I don't know.
Everybody, we was delivering a harp harmonica strap that we fixed for Mick, and it was late, man. They opened the stage for us, and we were on the stage while the Stones were coming up, getting their guitars, literally fixing to go out on the stage, and so we got down low under Charlie's drum set right behind the stage, watched him play, for most of the show, and walked around. And, you know, I really could have grabbed his foot. I wasn't going to do that, but, you know, that was a pretty close gig right there. I wish we could have taken some pictures.
And the thing about Charlie... Oh, go ahead.
No, it wouldn't be the first time you grab someone's foot. all three of us have been on the floor at some point in our careers.
Oh, they slapped Fred because they thought he was me.
You know, it's interesting. There's been so much information coming out about Charlie, and it's unfortunate because, and you mentioned Steve Ray Vaughan. I actually brought him on stage at that 89 show. Joe Cocker opened up for him, and one of the most unassuming and nice guys, and I vividly remember he had a bottle of water and he was on a scooter backstage the entire show before he got on stage. But I don't think people realize, you know, they just think about being rock stars. They think about all the money involved in it and the fact that they're on the stage playing in front of millions of adoring fans. And Charlie Watts recently said, you know, he expressed his distaste for going on tour, and the No Filter tour was going to be the same way. He said, I don't actually like touring. I don't like living out of suitcase. I hate being away from home. I always do tours thinking it's going to be the last one. Then I quit the band. And because I don't play my drums at home, the only way I can play my drums is on the road. So it's kind of a vicious cycle. Just talk about it, your experience. Because at any given time, if you go to any show, certainly in the Birmingham area and surrounding areas, I know you guys are heading to Atlanta and you do shows all over the Southeast, the United States, and the world. Let's talk about, you guys are very unassuming yourselves, although you're extroverted, much like myself, and you enjoy the atmosphere and the environment of being backstage with these rock and rollers. But you said something really interesting. You don't kiss their ass. And obviously, you're offering something to them, so they're going to be probably nicer to you than in some type of meet and greet with some radio geek like me. But just talk about the backstage experience with most of these guys. What do they do? Are they relaxed? Are they anxious? What's it normally like? And I would think, you know, like a lot of bands, you know, and I'll go back to Bette Midler. She talks about how she almost wants to throw up almost every time she goes on stage. She still has that tinge of butterfly-ish, if you will, when she goes on stage. Just talk about what it's like backstage with someone, say, for the Rolling Stones.
Well, you know, like, talking about that, we would see Sheryl Crow when she was first getting started. Anyway, she said, I want to be with the Rolling Stones, kept telling us that. So anyway, we starred in New York, Madison Square Garden.
And in the early days, we saw the sex, drugs, and rock and roll. But nowadays, the guys aren't even drinking. Kiefer have a little bit. But they all got their separate dressing rooms, and they're relaxed. They usually have Rufus Thomas or some blues guys back in the back jamming Ronnie and Keith. And, you know, we hang out with them. And then they all got their little homes away from homes there. They got little special things they like to carry with them. And Charlie's always got a rubber pads. He's keeping a beat backstage, you know, just keeping going like that. And then we hung out with Shirley and his daughters, and a real, real super cordial. Do you think that you're not talking to rock stars, you know, and all this man can't handle the big fame and fortune, especially the fortune.
And, you know, talking about backstage, you got a lot of times we got backline passes, which is, you know, you got the guitar tech, the crew chief, and they're in charge of 150 plus people. And just to be a part of that is so exciting. I mean, they've setting up some of the stages where they would have the mini stage going out, and, they would stay on the monitor, you know, on the speakers. Ed and Fred, we need the B stage straps, and just saying, man, we're a part of this, you know.
You're not on the huge stages unless you got an important job. So, you know, we've had a pretty important job for a long time, but
it's exciting. What's so exciting for us? Yes, Ronnie's done. We've done most of the straps for Ronnie, but now he's for years he's let us do the art design. He tells us what he wants, and he leaves it totally up to us. So it's a total surprise when he sees us.
And Charlie and Mick have done a lot of the stage designs and everything. And then one time we were back there hanging out years ago, and then with Ronnie and Keith and Charlie and everybody, and then the guys were saying, the managers, y'all got to go, they're getting ready. So we started to go, and Keith said, where are you going, Ed? Fred, get you a beer. So we got a beer, and we got all of us singing. Somebody took a picture of all of us singing with
Happy Birthday,
Ronnie and Keith.
Chooch McGee, he was a crew chief that was with them for 30 years, and God rest his soul, he passed after they did a sound check.
And then with Ronnie, when he was married to Joe, we'd be back there talking to Ronnie, I mean, up to 10 minutes before they go on stage, and Joe's doing Ronnie's hair and makeup and everything, you know, the eyeshadow and all this stuff. And he was really good about, you know, doing the hair and makeup. And they're just relaxing, and then they'd get excited and jump up and down.
But Charlie always did his little wiggle dance. We saw him do that several times.
Hey, I've seen that too. There's so many different facets that go into when you're talking about four or five guys who have kept it together as long as the Rolling Stones, and they're coming up on their 60th anniversary. And I think the great thing about Charlie was that he was that unassuming. He was the engine, and I think Keith said it best in his autobiographical read back in 2010. It was Charlie Watts' bed, a musical bed that I slept in every single night. Without Charlie, without that beat, we couldn't have got there. And I think it's really interesting because we're finding out so much more about Charlie now than we ever knew because he's passed away. Unfortunately, it took his death to realize that. But the fact that his first instrument was a banjo, he ripped the leg off of it and ended up using the banjo part as a drum, and that's how he got started. But just talk about not only the fact that he was so unassuming, that he was willing, or at least he felt comfortable allowing the Glimmer Twins and Keith and Mick to kind of do their thing and be that back guy, that guy in the back. Everyone knew. There's only so many bands where you knew every member's name, John Paul, George, and Ringo, and certainly you could do that with the Rolling Stones. But the fact that he got his start in jazz music, I think, is just so indicative of the backbeat and the backdrop of what the Rolling Stones sounded like on stage and how he did kind of keep the chaos between the lines.
Well, he the story to where Mick was looking for Charlie and he said, "Where's my drummer?" And so Charlie goes and knocks him out with his left hand,
got dressed up to do it too.
Yeah. Yeah. But well, Charlie was a type to where you think English gentlemen don't speak unless spoken to. You know, that's the way people thought, and they were a little intimidated with him. He rarely saw him getting photographs with people and everything because everybody thought, you know, I'm not going to bother him. But he wasn't snobbish. He wouldn't like that. You know, he was just ready for somebody to talk to him, you know.
We would come up to the guys and have some articles, memorabilia to sign, and they wouldn't hesitate, you know, to sign something for us. And we was in the back room and they were fixing to interview Charlie. And of course we were back there and, you know, we've just been blessed to be able to hang out places where we're not supposed to be. And nobody says anything to us because we're walking around when you're there at the big shows, we've got our working passes on. And when you're walking around, like, you know what you're doing, these locals, no matter where you're at, Europe or somewhere, they don't stop you. We always introduce ourselves to these people and tell them who we are, and you know, then they see us back and forth. And we had a 76 tour original poster that came off one of their walls in Germany, one of their tours. Anyway, we acquired that, a long story. And
76.
Everybody signed it, and we was in a room with Charlie, and we said, "Hey, Charlie, can you sign this?" And he gets out his Sharpie and looking around, he says, "Well, where is it at?" And I said, "Oh, it's in the truck. We'll bring it back." He says, "Oh, no, too late. We're doing an interview." He said, "Let's do it later." Well, later, you know, they're getting in the limo and they're heading to another town, you know.
We do have posters and things and a few snare drums signed by Charlie. And, you know, all these things, you always want to do more. We're going to do more because we've talked to them. We talked to him via the phone through somebody else that was in London, and we'd always wish him well, you know, when he had his surgeries, and say we're ready to see you and at the next show and talking all this, you know. So we stayed in touch with Charlie long after the tours and everything. But he had a house in London, a real nice one, and one in Essex, and then North Devon is where his Arabian horse farm is. He's got over 250 Arabian horses.
Wow.
And they were doing a lot of trading and selling when they were in
Kentucky Derby.
And we talked to him about coming there. He really liked it. He came up, watched us work, and we'd bring an old sewing machine with us. And he was talking about how it's hard to find people to repair tack and harness and stuff at his farm in England. And we're saying, well, you know, we might could come there and do it. And then we should have, but they were still on tour for another year. It would have been better if Charlie would have been there, you know?
Yeah. And back at, we tried to be ourselves normal with all these people. We never did. Mick was a little intimidating first, and then, you know, we got to know that, you know, he got to be friends with him, and we was with him at Wembley Stadium in England, and that was just so fantastic, you know, being at a historic stadium. And everybody, of course, came up and greeted us, and we saw Mick in the corner, and we said, "Well, hey, Mick, how you doing?" You know, and he said, "Oh, I don't know if they like us anymore." He was talking about the fans because they had to cancel the tour. And I told Mick, I said, you got to get out there and show the young ones how to do it. And he said, I appreciate that, guys. And Fred said, you got to slay the audience. And, you know, here we are giving him a pep talk.
Yeah, and there he is at the age of 78, getting ready to go on stage in St. Louis September 26th with the Rolling Stones, and still getting after it. And we've had Damon Johnson on our show several times. He's kind of my rock correspondent, and he's like, the guy is living a super clean life right now, and that's why he can continue to have a four-year-old, a young wife, and 78, and still running up and down the stage. Ed and Fred join us here. They're master strap makers. They make accessories for about every iconic band you can name, and they've been gracious enough, and I'm so grateful to have you on the show this morning. We talked a little bit off air about what's going on. One of the reasons I wanted to start the KCAST radio app and get back into classic rock was just because of where we are. Classic rock has never been spoken about ever leaving. I can't go a day without hearing the song More Than a Feeling. It's amazing that thing is 50 years old and it's still so relevant. And when you look at the age of some of these rockers, whether you're talking about Mick or Keith or David Crosby or, you know, Paul McCartney or Roger Daltrey or Mick Fleetwood, we go on, or Bob Dylan, Brian Wilson, Rod Stewart, Eric Clapton, they're all in their mid to upper 70s, and it's not morbid to talk about, but I mean, these guys can't live forever. Their music will. But talk about how that affects you guys, because you're friends with these people. I mean, you're making things, and again, this is not something you're mail ordering and saying, okay, see you next tour. I mean, you're backstage with these guys. When people see you, they know who you are. Talk about how that will affect you.
Well, it does affect us, because shortly after we talked to Charlie in the hall there, we said, man, where's Jones for a beer? You know, it's Rock and Road. So we walk around and nobody was doing anything. Went in Ronnie's dressing room and his bodyguard was there and he was saying, I said, can we come in? They were having a party for Ronnie.
All kind of blues.
And I had all these blues and Kenny G was there. Well, I couldn't believe how little he was. And anyway, he asked us to tell Charlie, you know, we met everybody and then I just said out loud, Charlie, it's time to get ready for the show. We got to go. And then we were telling everybody, okay, you got to leave. It didn't matter if they're celebrities or what. We were in charge at that moment. And Ronnie says, yeah, you're right, you know. And so his bodyguard thanked us, you know, because we've done it before. Every time he asks us to do something, you know, we don't hesitate. And you always agree with everybody when they say something. We've seen the crew chief. Sometimes he'll be super uptight. We were there at one of the shows, and they were doing a full
documentary
on the Rolling Stones and
pay-per-view
and or one of those. And this was in New Jersey. And of course, they don't know who we are, the locals, and they're telling us to move. The Stones are coming in with their limos. And so we said, okay. So we moved close to the stage. And you know, they saw the guys coming up to us and greeting us. And one thing we never do is show up empty-handed. We have to have our new straps for them, because we're there. That's why we're there. And a lot of times we're working, it blows our mind, because the guitar techs, they'll bring a strap down to us and they'll say, this is broken. I said, well, how in the world did this get broken?
You might have 10 old straps.
And we're sitting there working, and the film crew was watching us and they were saying, well, who are y'all? Everybody's talking about that. I said, oh, we're just Ed and Fred, you know. So yeah. we kind of did the Charlie thing. We got out of interviews for a while. And then Charlie, he was walking by and I called out his name and he nodded at us and went back into the room. And I swear he came back about 10 minutes and came up and greeted us, you know, and it was just so nice to have these guys welcome us, you know. We say, man, we still blow our mind, because we say, are we a part of the show? And then once we go through all, people think it's easy for us. We have to find our way to the productions if we're out of town. And once we get to the productions or out of the country, and when you're walking to productions without a pass on, they're going to stop you, you know, and you got to keep on walking and say, going to productions. Well, once you get to productions, there, everybody, you know, we know the people and they're so glad to hear us. And then they'll get on a walk and they'll say something like, Pierre, Ed and Fred's here. And it goes through the whole venue saying, Ed and Fred's here. You know, they're going, oh, no, Ed and Fred's here.
I'm saying we're squeaky clean through the years. You know,
we've had some fun times with the guys. Oh, believe me, don't get me wrong.
Yeah. I was around a lot of heavy drug users in the Army and all that stuff, you know, but we didn't go that route. We always respected our artwork, you know, nothing worse than a little pot every once in a while, but you know.
And talking about missing somebody, after we taught the Charlie One show, we were saying, man, we walked around the corner and saw Bobby Keys, and he welcomed us. He said, y'all want a beer? And I said, here we are having a beer with Bobby Keys. And
the only one that was drinking.
And I swear about 4 months later, he passes, you know. So you never know. We should have gotten a picture with him. But, hey, man, we cherish the moments. What happens, happens. You know,
we realized a long time ago, being around these multimillionaires, that they all got their problems, man. Nobody's got a perfect life, you know.
And they don't care. They really don't care what, you know, they really care more about friendship and who you are, you know.
You guys have been so blessed to have the gift, first of all, making this wonderful artwork you do, and certainly to be around these iconic rock and rollers. And I don't know if you've written a book or you want to. You probably should. And your artwork is fantastic. And I've seen your artwork, and so I know it's second to none. It's unbelievable. And I know the guys trust you, and they love having you down there. I get a common question. I probably haven't been backstage as much as you guys have, but back in my rock days, I certainly brought on my share of bands, and I always get the question, who are some rock and rollers that were nothing like you thought they'd be, and then rock and rollers who end up being a lot nicer than you thought? Can you give me, and I just got a text, can you give me one particular artist or iconic artist that you've worked with that quite frankly just was nothing like you thought they'd be? Do you have one?
Well, we saw Alice Cooper when he was at the little Mexican restaurant in Hoover. And
Damon was playing
guitar, and Alex was not dressed like a wild man and everything. And he was getting ready to go to the golf course the next day at 8 o'clock in the morning. And we talked to him, showed him our work for a while. And he really wanted us to get with him like that afternoon. And then he calls us up and says, I got these interviews and everything's going crazy. Let's get with you later. But no, he was just Mr. Regular Joe, you know,
just like Well, Kiss wasn't like what we thought. We was expecting more from them, but they weren't super friendly. They wanted us to reproduce some guitar straps and had all these things. And we started telling them prices, and they looked at us like, are y'all crazy? You know, y'all doing these for nothing. And I said, hey, guys, you know, we're working for a living too. You know, told the guitar tech. So that was it on that, you know. But, you know, we liked the music, but we just didn't we didn't bond with them. There's been a few of them that we didn't bond with, but very few.
John Lee Hooker was real down to earth. You know, he couldn't really pick up a book and read it, but he was streetwise and counted his money and everything. And he had some of the things he wanted us to do, and then BB. And towards the end, I don't know if you saw BB when he last came here, but his son was keeping us away from BB, and we had stuff to show him because they didn't want him. Their daddy's spending their money, you know?
Yeah.
And BB, when we first met him, he said, I was wearing a Stones and or a couple of different t-shirts, and BB said, these guys made us rich, you know? And he knew his friends would be with Billy Gibbons, and he said, tell Billy that he did a good job on that how.
And I John Lee Hooker, yeah.
And I didn't have anything to do with that lawsuit. And so we got a picture of us and John, and we told Billy that, and that really eased his mind, you know, because, one time McCartney said, I saw in an interview, this young girl saying, she's sitting down, she's saying, Paul, Mr. McCartney, I played one of your songs in my band, and he said, it's already been done. It's all right, honey. We got to say hi to Ringo. We was talking with John, so he was touring with Ringo's All-Star Band, you know, just hanging out. And I said, would you like to meet Ringo? He said, he's in there, you know. I said, it'd be cool if you introduce us, you know. And he just makes his grumbling noise like he does, you know. We walk in there and he says, hey, Starkey. I think he called him Starkey. He called him something else. And he said, this is Ed and Fred. And Ringo jumped up and shook her hand just as nice as he could be. And we were talking, you know how we like to talk. And
he was headed to the stage.
They were getting ready to go to the stage. And
didn't get a picture.
Yeah.
He wasn't signing autographs then, but he's the oldest drummer right now at 81.
And we talked to Paul McCartney on the phone, and we were going to do a strap for him. And we heard Linda in the background saying, we won't go with an all-leather guitar strap.
And we should have told her we had some vegan leather.
You know, it's amazing by hearing this, because I you cannot wipe the smile off my face. And the more I think about this is when you basically are the baby stroller. You are encapsulating, you are holding this instrument that these iconic rock and rollers are making these beautiful sounds with. So you're as much as the guitar is, as far as I'm concerned, because everyone needs a guitar strap. They need these accessories. And obviously you guys have built quite the business and quite the reputation, the friendship with all these rock and rollers. Guys, I could sit here and talk to you all day long. I know you don't do a lot of interviews, and I appreciate this rare opportunity to get you on the show to talk about Charlie and everything you've done. And golly, as soon as this COVID crap kicks the bucket, we can start getting back out. And I can't wait to see you backstage again. I really appreciate your time this morning, Ed and Fred. Thank you so much.
Hey, we really like it. We're going to miss Charlie. And you know, we've reached out to his wife and daughters. And, you know, hey. We got to see him while we can, you know.
We were just getting started, Tony. We're just ready to talk for another hour.
I know. We'll get you back on. And hopefully it won't be because of the death of one of these rock and roll icons. We could just talk about some stuff. And we'll certainly see you soon. Ed and Fred, thank you so much for your time, man. Appreciate you guys. I love you.
All right. Love you too, bro.
There they are, Ed and Fred, master guitar strap makers. Just fantastic work. And I'm telling you, I think the last time I may have seen them backstage at a show was at the Bob Seger show. And if you're at a big show, you're going to see Ed and Fred. This is KCAS Radio. It's Classic Rock to the Bone.